Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following is paid commercial programming. The content and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Entercom Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors. From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between, let's talk everything outdoors.
Avoid! You're on the crazy train!
Welcome to the Skipper Bud's Cutting Edge Outdoors. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Skipper Bud's Cutting Edge Outdoors. He's Dan Bush. I'm Tom Neubauer. We come to you every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. We are live. We are unrehearsed, so you never know what you're going to get. And by the way, the Big Show stole that line from us, by the way.
What?
The Big Show. They got an ad where they say you never know what you're going to hear. That's what we always used to say. They stole it from us. But anyway, you can become part of the show by giving us a call at 414-799-1250. That's 799-1250. Or you can always email us live at the Smokies inbox at ceoguys@yahoo.com.
Okay. You know what else they stole, too?
Yeah. Three men in the booth.
Beer talk.
Because years ago,
12 years ago, somebody... All we say, well, we're just like a couple guys sitting around having a beer at the bar, shooting BS. And then I heard Gary say that one time, and I'm thinking, and having more than two people in the booth. They always said that.
Oh, you can't have more than two people in the booth. You can't do that. And we were doing it, and then
can't talk over each other.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
But everybody does that now.
But it's terrible. Well, it's terrible. Terrible.
They talk over them. They talk over each other all the time. You hear four guys talking at once. It's a great show.
What's funny is Leroy, when one of the hosts, like if Billy's trying to do an ad for whatever, Leroy will just keep talking.
Yeah, I like it. He's funny.
He is funny. But
I hope he makes it into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah.
That
definitely is
one guy I'd really like to see.
That'd be nice. Hall of Fame. So, Danny, I thought we were going to have another crappy day driving into the studio, but because we were supposed to get 2 to 4, 3 to 5, whatever they were saying. And I think by me, it got maybe about a half an inch.
Yeah, every Thursday or so, I start looking at the forecast, and then I realize, oh, crap, I'm going to have to get up even earlier on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
It's bad enough to get up early on Saturday morning, except I'm used to it now. And I'm an older guy. I go to bed early. No more nightlife. But you got to get up even earlier if the roads are going to be bad.
Yeah, I got up earlier today. And then I got to sit around the house because I looked out the one window. It's like, oh, geez, that's not bad at all.
Well, I woke up earlier and turned on Coast to Coast and listened to some guy talk about how the earth is flat. After 30 minutes of listening to that, I couldn't stand it. I turned off the radio and got up and started getting ready to come on in.
Oh, goodness me. Oh,
yeah.
There's a lot of kooks out there.
I don't know. A lot of kooks. Got some compelling evidence there, Tom.
You know what I don't understand, Danny, is like our weather forecasters, you know, they have a hard time telling us what it's going to be next week, next month, sometimes even tomorrow. You know, they get things wrong. I mean, that's understandable. But yet you got these physics people, scientists, the physics people that they're going to tell me what the weather was like on the Earth 2 billion years ago. You know, they're going to – it's like, you don't know that. What do you think you're going to – you think you know that? Get out of here.
Well, even the whole even the whole carbon dating thing, I think, is based on some flawed science there, I believe. When they say this is this many million or this many thousand years old, I've heard that that's kind of like...
Well, oh, you know,
as exact as what they'd lead you to believe.
And you know what else? They talk about how the universe began, the Big Bang Theory. How would you ever think you would know how this universe began? Multi billions of years
it's
ago.
Expanding,
it's
expanding,
like, Tom. Yeah, it's expanding. That's fine. But
kinda like
don't
my
tell,
waistline, it's expanding right now.
But they didn't need a big bang to do that. Yeah, but they don't need to tell me how this universe got started. I mean, because there ain't no way they know how it got started. Come on.
I think if I were to leave a rock on a table here and come back a million years later, it still would be a rock.
Yep, still would be a rock.
I don't think it would be an advanced life form.
No, I don't think so. And you know, it's another thing I don't think.
What don't you think, Tom?
We'll see if Sam knows this. Sam.
He's smart. He went to college.
We're supposed to be descendants of chimpanzees, right? I mean, we evolved from chimpanzees, right?
You're a gorilla. Yeah. Big guy like you.
Well, then let me ask you a question. Why are there still chimpanzees?
Well, it's
we evolved from them, they shouldn't be there anymore.
Dude, it's Planet of the Apes. It was in reverse.
Did you ever think? I mean, seriously.
We evolved into them, and they evolved into us.
Why are there so many subspecies of, you know, monkeys and gorillas then?
Well, sure, there's subspecies, but everybody says, all these scientists say, we evolved from chimpanzees. But everything else in nature that evolved from one thing to another, you look at, you know, stuff coming out of the sea and turning out, they had fins, now they got legs, you know. Whatever they were, they're not anymore because they evolved into something else. Well, then there wouldn't be any chimpanzees if we were evolved from chimpanzees.
Yeah, that's a brilliant argument, Tom.
There wouldn't be any more.
Why, they'd be gone because they would have
evolved into us.
And last I seen, they haven't changed much.
No, they haven't.
You know?
As a matter of fact, Lucy looked just like a chimpanzee, and she was supposed to be like a humanoid.
Lucy?
Yeah, she was some fossils that they found that were from, I don't know, a million years ago.
For
a long time ago. But, you know, her skull looks like that of, you know, some type of, you know, ape type skull, you know, but they said that she was a Homo erectus, and Bart Simpson wished he would have known that name a long time ago. I saw that in one of the Simpsons episodes. They were at a museum and they showed a picture of a Cro-Magnon man or something like that, and it said Homo erectus, and Bart Simpson says, "Boy, I wish I'd have known that years ago." Oh, goodness me. Hey, I got a couple of emails, Danny.
Okay, good.
Okay, let's get a little serious here. Yeah,
glad we got off.
This is from Bob on Stumpy Bay. He keeps us on our toes.
Good.
Bob says the 94th annual Coon Feed is in Delafield today.
Hey!
Starts at 4:30 today in Delafield. So maybe we'll mention this later on in the show in the 7 o'clock hour. But, yeah, the 94th. Wow, that's been going on a long time.
I dare say the guy who started it is dead.
Yeah, probably.
He was 1 year old when he started it.
Jeez, I don't know.
And he's 95 now.
Yeah. Now we got one from our buddy, Tex, out on the
big rig.
Yep. He says, "Hey, fellers." That's how he says, "fellers."
Hey, fellers. I kind of like that, fellers. They used to say that on Mayberry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
fellers. That was a good one.
Gomer. Fellers.
Just wanted you to know that the sturgeon tastes pretty darn good smoked, especially if you make a dip out of it. Looks like if we don't get a significant cold front soon, all the sturgeon shacks are going to have to be pulled out by ATV and set up in shallow water on Winnebago. Lake Poygan, they just started driving trucks on, but with the party on Poygan this weekend, I don't know about that, we'll see how many trucks go through the ice and how beat up it gets. Think I'm going to head to Green Bay for whitefish to escape the big party people. P.S. I hope I don't float away on an iceberg.
Well, Tex, we'll come looking for you.
Yeah, we'll send out a search party.
I knew a guy who spent the night on an iceberg in Green Bay.
Really?
Yeah. When I lived in Green Bay. Yeah, he went out there and the crack happened. And, he spent the night out there. But he was okay. I think he might have been in his truck, too. I'm trying to remember.
A couple of years ago, I remember a number of trucks got stuck out there on an iceberg. You remember that?
I would never Never want to do that. No. One of the most cool story I read, Outdoor Life Book Club. My dad used to belong to it, so we'd get these outdoor hunting, fishing books. I was the only one who read them. Pop never read them. He just belonged to the club, so he belonged to the club. Anyway, there was a story about a couple guys back during the Depression, and they were up in, I believe it was it northern Wisconsin? And they were out ice fishing they'd go out for lake trout.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd use hand lines, and they'd bob for these lake trout in deep water. And they'd always bring a skiff with them where they'd drag the skiff out just in case that happened. And what happened is the one guy's bobbing they got a couple fish, and he's all of a sudden he noticed his line is off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not hanging straight. And they realize that they broke loose on the ice. So a couple guys get into the skiff and start rowing back, and it would only hold so many people. And they said, well, we'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
And a storm, blizzard really hit. And they actually had someone on land have a Coast Guard guy jumped in the boat to row back out, and he got him in there. But they rowed for hours and hours and hours, and they weren't making any progress. And then the lake froze over, and the skiff froze right
into. Oh, jeez.
So out of the three guys, the Coast Guard guy was the first one to get, like, all of a sudden he wasn't. They were taking turns rowing, and the Coast Guard guy all of a sudden wasn't responding, and he died. I don't know, like, froze to death. And then the other guy. So the third guy, he got out, he waited, and then it froze enough where it was frozen over where he could try and walk to shore.
Okay.
But it was all, the ice was all rough and stuff, right?
Sure, yeah.
So, and his feet were froze at this point, and he's stumbling and falling. And I think he ended up at a small town in Michigan, I believe. He ended up walking to shore, and he finally hit a shoreline after, I don't know, a day of walking. He was found, I don't know how many hours later, 24 or further hours, and he knocked on a cabin window, and they looking, oh, my God, this guy's half dead. But, yeah, he made it. I think he ended up losing his feet, but he ended up living a good life after. But what a horrible type experience. And they were prepared, too. They had the skiff and everything. Yeah. But whew.
I know. Well, the ice is not that great up there in the Bay of Green Bay this year. This is an off year because, you know, we're looking at the end of January, and when my son was fishing last week Monday, he said there was like 5 inches of ice.
I'm sure there's enough where I could walk out in front of my place.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's
try
enough.
You know that brand new laser 8-inch auger, Tom? It's still in the box.
Oh geez. You can use it.
You know how I bought it. It was my Christmas present to myself.
Yeah,
yeah. And I took my piggy bank. I got this change thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took it to the bank.
Yeah.
And I was within $10 of affording that with my $10 off coupon. Yeah. And I thought, hey, it pays to save your change. You can buy yourself something you want.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years.
So I got my auger.
Yeah, that's great.
It's new in the box, ready to go.
Ready to go today.
Maybe next year. I don't know.
You know, it was weird. Now, like on yesterday, my son took his two kids out, the 4-year-old and the 7-year-old, out ice fishing. And they love it. Those two are just becoming great little anglers, you know. They reel in their own fish. His daughter was even taking them off the hook, you know. I mean, they're getting to be very good. Anyway, he said at one point, though, it was pouring rain. And I said, well, geez, where I live, it was just like a light mist, you know, a misting.
Right.
And he said, no, by him, it was a pouring rain. And I said, wow, that's weird how things change from, you know, one area to another, you know. So,
well, driving in from Waukesha, I see that all the time, Tom. Where when I leave near the lake, when I leave work from near the lake and then drive out, even in summertime, there can be a definite temperature change.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You know,
yeah.
From one to the next. So.
Yeah, the temperature change, definitely, without a doubt. So. Yeah, I guess it's about time to take a break.
When we come back, I got some hunting stories.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I hope you are too, folks.
Little beer talk. Beer talk when we come back,
Tom. Beer talk. All right. Little beer talk. We'll
Except
be right
we don't
back, folks.
Endorse drinking beer.
All right. We'll
Soda
be right back.
Only. All right. Welcome back to a little ride on our mystery ship. Thanks for listening. This is Skipper Bud's Cutting Edge Outdoors. I'm Dan Bush, Tom Neubauer. And what does Tom always mess your name up with? What's your alter ego?
Wesley.
Wesley.
Yeah.
That's your like pseudo undercover name, like when you're in the bars and you meet a chick and you don't want to give her your like real name.
Yeah. Try not to admit that I'm, you know,
Wesley Danger.
A graduated college student still in debt. Instead, I'll go with Wesley, I think, you know, wealthy landowner.
Wealthy single straight landowner from Douglas County. Mm-hmm. I think it's wealthy white straightling something from Douglas County. Anyway, I guess other than saying, hey, honey, I want to come home and check out my couch I live on in my mother's basement.
Oh, it's like that?
Sorry, man. I didn't mean it.
Shots fired.
Totally apologize there.
You notice I'm staying out of this.
You're staying out of that over there. Well, he used to insult all our other. You know what he used to? He used to call Billy Schmidt.
No,
he used to call.
Never.
He used to call him fat.
That's,
he used to.
That's
he
not
got
true.
On Billy because of his
that's
weight. I can't believe it.
That's not true.
He was very insensitive.
That's
in
true.
Today's world, time you can't. We're a tolerant society. You don't call people fatty anymore.
That's not true.
Chubby 2x4 can't get through the kitchen door. Mm. Remember
nope.
that one?
Yeah. I never said that about Billy Schmitz.
There was a girl we called Lead Bottom in third grade.
There was a girl at the bar.
I don't know who came up with Lead Bottom.
There was a girl at the bar we called Thunder Thighs.
Well, that's a common one.
That's a common one.
Thunder
yeah.
Thighs.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Nothing
Those are things
that.
You don't say anymore, Tom.
No, you can't say that no more?
Nope.
Oh.
You can't call people names.
Oh, I don't call anybody names.
Well, you just find other ways to aggravate and insult them.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. You got a special way.
I'm a
gift, Tom. You got a gift of pissing people off.
Well, that I do.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about,
I do piss
man.
People off sometimes, but it's only in the fishing world that I do.
Well, that's your whole world.
Yeah, that's only in the fishing
it's
world.
It's only in the fishing world. This whole world, Sam, is fishing, right?
Yeah.
He's a guide. Tournament pro, bass angler of the year, TV show.
No,
in the fishing world he makes people mad.
That's only because, well, never. It.
Come on, go ahead and defend yourself.
No, I don't know how to explain it. But I did want to get into something. Weren't you going to tell us a hunting story?
Yeah, okay, way to change the subject there. So far, I'm
going to go get a coffee, I think.
Yeah, I apologize. Listen, first of all, I apologize to you, Tom.
You don't have to.
And I apologize to Wesley here about the couch comment. So anyway, I was out hunting, right? And there I was. There I was. Well, I had a little time to go up north there. I had time last week because I had a three-day weekend. So I decided to go out in the woods to once again pursue the wily fox squirrel. Well, as it turns out, I did not get the wily fox squirrel.
Were you half right?
I was half right. It was even better. So there I am. And I'm looking into fresh snow, and I see all kinds of look to be some fox tracks, possibly coyote, but I'm looking at them. I'm thinking, well, you know, they look a little smaller. It looks more like fox. And it flashed through my head. Now, I'm stalking with my .22 Ruger 10/22 with 37 grain long rifle hollow points. It flashed through my head that if I'm sitting quietly, those predators are on the move, no wind. I thought I might just see one. I had kind of a premonition. Well, 2 hours later, I'm trying to sneak up on these squirrels, but they were way too wily. I'd see them up ahead, and then I'm still hunting, and I'm standing by a tree for about 30 minutes, and there he comes, old wily red fox. Now, I've only seen them, once I was deer hunting and coming up over a ridge on a drive where there were some dens. I had seen holes there, and a big red fox was running in front of me in the brush about 25 yards away, and it's going away from me. I got it in the scope, but probably wouldn't have hit it anyway, but I had a .44 Magnum, and I did not want to blow a fox to hell.
Yeah.
You know, because my dad shot one with a shotgun, my uncle, numerous friends while deer hunting, and you just blow it up and leave it and lay,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't want to do that.
No.
You shot one in self-defense once.
Mm-hmm.
another one I was stalking years ago outside of Green Bay with a 22 handgun hunting squirrels, and I just holstered it, and I come up over a ridge in 10 feet, 15 feet in front of me is a gray fox broadside looking at me. But when I went to my move to grab my, you know, out of my holster, it thing was gone.
You weren't fast enough, huh? You weren't quick draw.
No, I wasn't like, yeah, the
Clint Eastwood. Good, the bad, and the ugly.
Can't whistle yeah. that way. But anyway.
Can you find that one?
He'll be on that. He's busy back there. So anyway, finally, here comes the fox. And I'm really glad it was with a small game rifle and not during deer hunting I'm just. So, because I kind of consider, I wasn't specifically hunting for fox, but I was small game hunting with a license. They're in season with a firearm that can. So I feel like I was, in a sense, you know, small game hunting, getting a quarry that I was after. Sure. It was an incidental. So here it's running, it's coming along, and it's on a fast trot. And so I try to kind of make a little squeaking sound, kind of like this. So it stops. Well, it doesn't stop. But it turns and comes straight towards me. Huh. And now I got the scope on 7 power because I was looking at a squirrel 80 yards away. And he's right in the scope. And now he's coming dead toward me. And you remember that story with the crossbow when I screwed up? The buck was coming straight towards me. And I went to raise the crossbow and it bolted on me back in late October or whatever. Anyway, now it's coming straight toward me. And that flashed through my head. I thought, I'm not going to make any noise or alert him, because if he looks up and sees me, he could be gone fast, right?
Yeah, right.
So I thought, I got to take the moving shot. But he's coming straight towards me, so I got him in a scope. I thought, I got to put a slug in him. Bang, I shoot. And he's about 30 yards away, and it drops. And it's immediately up on its feet, and it's going in a circle like it's chasing its tail and growling. So I'm like, I got to shoot again. Now, of course, it's just a blur, but I put scope on, bang, down he goes again. Then the thing starts trying to lurch on off, and there's this big log, and all I see is the top of the fox come up, then down. And I went, bang, 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 done. So what happened, and this all took like 5 seconds, right?
Right,
so the first shot, you know they're mostly fur, Tom?
Yeah.
They're not.
Oh, they're
skinny. It looked like it was 30 pounds. First shot, I hit it too low in the chest.
Okay.
And that went out and hit a front leg. And I think what happened, that was what knocked it down. But then it was up on its feet. It had no idea what happened. So when it was going in a circle growling, it was trying to find whatever had hurt it or bit it. It thought something had, you know. So that's why it was growling, going after a unseen adversary.
Sure.
The second shot, when it was spinning, I hit it in the top of the back, which is what basically knocked it down. And then as it was lurching along and I went bang, 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 I hit one through the chest and one through the neck. So I got him 4 out of 5, and he made it about 10 yards. Beautiful red fox. Mm-hmm. And it happened that quick. And then I'm like, holy cow, I got a fox. So I took it to our friend Dan Johnson, and I'm going to get a rug done.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can get cool mounts where they're like coming up, chasing a pheasant or something like that. But I think I'm going to get a rug on black, kind of a velvet kind of a background. I think that'll look really cool.
Yeah.
Something I can put on the wall.
That'll be neat.
Yeah, I don't have room
for
it.
And that's with the head too, right?
Yeah, they can. Now, I looked online and I saw some. You can do some with the head with it kind of like growling. And then you can do some with the mouth closed.
Yeah.
I think the mouth closed looks just as good, you know?
Yeah, I see, if it was a bear, I'd want to see the teeth. But on a fox, nah, they're kind of cute and cuddly, you know?
You know, I used to take my bear rug to the school, and the students would look at it. And, of course, the most fascinating thing they do, they'd be reaching in, grabbing the teeth,
driving
me nuts, pulling the tongue out. And is this real? No, that's plastic. They put the over there, but the first thing they're looking at, the teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Claws are real.
Yeah, yeah. And
yeah,
claws.
So I was pretty fired up. I shot a fox.
Yeah.
And I used, here, I can show you this, Tom. I brought this in to show you.
Can I touch it?
Go ahead. Play with it as much as you want. So anyway.
Oh, this is the 15. I should get the 15s.
Yes, yes. I had originally wanted, it's called the BX15 magazine. It's made by Ruger. Now, there's many aftermarket companies that make Ruger magazines, but if you want one that's for sure going to feed and be reliable and never fail, get the Ruger one. More expensive, but worth it.
Well, but it's not that expensive.
Well,
really.
Here's the deal. The Ruger the BX25 is just too big. When I look at it,
I got a couple of those.
I mean,
they're
it
big.
Just looks too big.
It looks like a AR. It looks like an assault rifle. You
it's
know,
it's coming out and yeah. And for years I've just used the 10-round magazine, which fits flush
right,
into the bottom.
Yeah,
and even if for holding it, I carry it. My hand's right there a lot.
Yeah,
but I figured this 15-round would not be that obtrusive,
right.
And yet that would be plenty where if you throw that in there, you probably don't need to bring any shells in your pockets, you know, jostling around. You can pretty much just go out, pop this clip in, or magazine is the correct term. And here's the interesting thing, though, guys. If you're going to get this, and there's a lot of Ruger 10/22 owners out there, watch carefully because the price varies.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I had actually gotten... one of my students was kind enough to give me a Cabela's gift certificate for like $15, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went up to Cabela's and I thought I'll use that $15. Well, they got this magazine for like $35. So for $15 off, I got it for $20. But then I went online and saw a bunch of places that have these online for like $19.
Oh, my goodness.
So I went online and bought a second one for $19. So now I got two of them. But yeah, it feeds. Feeds real nice.
I should get that 15 one because you're right. That 25 one is just it looks like an AK-47 hanging out there. You know,
and
the big clip.
And this doesn't look like an assault rifle.
No,
it's still, It's still kind of cool.
What is that? About 5-6 inches long, something like that.
Yeah, it's still kind of cool. Yeah. And the other thing I did too. Is I bought a replacement stock. It's in Gilly Green or Gilly GA. I don't know. It's kind of like a camo green,
dark green. Yeah, sure.
And it's a rubberized kind of stock.
Yeah.
And it was a bolt-on stock, so I replaced the old wood stock with that.
Yeah.
That cost me about $70-$80. And then I got the BX-22 trigger because the trigger on my 10/22 was over 5 pounds.
Right, I remember you telling
us
about that.
You put it on a squirrel, you had to squeeze. Well, now you put it on a squirrel and you think about sending it, bang, it's on its way. So even at this Fox, that was helpful because that Fox was, I mean, when I had to take those shots, man, it was moving, you know, I was trying to get away and I was able to just get on and bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
In fact, the last shot, I thought I was on its neck for a split second, and I shot, and that's where I got it.
Yeah.
So,
Well, congrats.
Some little
nice red fox.
Some little adjustments you can do to your Ruger 10/22 to make it even better.
Well, folks, we got to go to a break. Coming up next will be the gut report, so stay tuned for that. And don't forget, after the 6:45 break, we will be playing the Hornswoggle. Brought to you by Carl's Country Markets out there in Menominee Falls. So stay tuned for a lot more right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Come here. I'm going to eat you. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain. Get in my belly.
The Gut Report is brought to you by Discount Liquor. Well, you know, folks, every now and then I make something without a recipe, but I figure if certain things taste good and I put them together, it's got to be good, right? So what I did was I made my duck last week, but I had some leftovers, all right? And so I cut the leftovers into pieces, you know, like 1-inch pieces, cut those. But then what I did was I fried a onion cut oriental style, and then I put some mushrooms in there. So I got mushrooms, onions, a little garlic, and then I threw in the pieces of cooked duck just to warm them up. Now, I did something now that would have been good just by itself, but I did something that some of you might think is just terrible that I did. I put some barbecue sauce in it, and you know what? It was fantastic. I mean, it seems like you put barbecue sauce on just about anything, and it's going to taste good, but this
You're
was...
You're right.
Yeah, this was really good. The onions, the mushrooms, a little garlic in with the duck, and a little barbecue sauce. I'm telling you that, I was a happy camper that day. So if you have any leftover duck, I mean, you could do this with chicken or beef or whatever, or pork, whatever you got. Anyway, the Gut Report was brought to you by Discount Liquor, where you're going to find the best price, selection, and service at 51st and Oklahoma in Milwaukee and Main Street in Barstow and Waukesha. For weekly specials, go to DiscountLiquorInc.com.
want some whiskey and you want a sugar in your tea. What's all this crazy question they're asking me? This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, cause I don't wanna see. Mama told me let's come.
Welcome back to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors. Hey, thanks everybody for listening. You know, Tom, we got a lot of people out there listening. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. But mostly we want to thank our law enforcement officers out there working hard, protecting us, and the first responders, and also the servicemen protecting us, keeping our country great.
Mm-hmm.
And taking a break when they should be working and listening to us right now.
I forgot to give a shout out to my son Andy.
Hey Andy.
I should have done it a little earlier because he works for Bell Ambulance and he gets out of work at 6 a.m. So, and it usually takes him about a half hour to get home. So I forgot to give him a shout out
unless
earlier.
There's a call, right?
What well, if you unless get a there's call a call, at
5:55?
Or,
okay.
Yeah.
Or, you can't see. Well, you know, I'm
something
sorry,
comes
I'm
up.
I'm punching out right
yeah,
now. My
yeah.
time's up.
No, you can't do that all the time there.
You ever work in a factory?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I'm actually a machinist by trade. Well,
you continually amaze me, Tom, with your skills and ability.
What do you call that?
Apprenticeship.
Apprenticeship, yep, in Sturtevant, Wisconsin. Then went to the, you know, South Milwaukee at Bucyrus Erie.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I left that lucrative position to become a stupid fishing guy.
Right. Thank God you got the rich wife.
God,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, I worked at Packerland Packing in Green Bay. I took one semester off of college. Actually, I went my freshman year, and I got tired of not having a car, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the rich kids that would be at the college had a brand new car that daddy bought them right when they went to college. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a rich kid. So anyway, I took the first semester of my second year off. I remember my mom cried, oh, you're dropping out of college. And Mom, I'm just working. I want to get a car. So I worked at Packerland Packing in Green Bay, a packing house. Not the greatest place to work in the world. Oh. You're working in a freezer.
Green Bay Packers,
Well, anyway, it was a block from my house. So I just walked there, and they're hiring all the time. I think it was mostly illegals working there and me. But anyway, truth be told. But anyway, you made okay money. So the first time I was there, all of a sudden, like some kind of whistle or something sounds for a break, right? Well, I'm still finishing doing what I'm doing. I was on a packaging line boxing a meat or something. And I turn around and look around. Gone. There's not a human being within sight. And I learned when those whistles go for the break, everything just, boom, everybody's out. I mean, it's like, it's comical. I mean, it could be, whatever they're holding is suspended in midair. They're gone. Yeah, when they're on their brakes, they're on their brakes. And then when the break ends, it's like instantaneously.
They're all back again.
They're back there. It's like the football team lining up online for the snap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was my factory experience. I learned to take full advantage of the brakes. Get out of there when the whistle goes.
See, and I rarely, when it was a break time, I rarely did it because we were paid on piecework.
Yeah.
So the more you made, the more you produced, the more you made. And so I'd rather make more money. So
there were guys that could do the meat cutting where there was a certain incentive where if they could, and there were some guys really quick with the knives there. The first job I had was these big chucks, I guess the big, I don't know what, like the quarter or whatever, hind quarter of the beef would come down. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to take three of them and put them into a box, right? And then you'd band it. Okay, so one guy would be throwing them in, the other guy would be banding, and the other guy would be stacking them on a pallet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd alternate between, but just to pimp the guy on the pallet, what you'd secretly do is you'd save three of the biggest ones and kind of keep them to the side, and then when you get three giant ones, you'd put them in there, put them in the box, right?
So then,
and then you'd watch the guy at the end as it came down the belt, right? And he's unsuspecting because he's used to a certain, and he'd go to grab it and he'd be like, and especially if you waited till the pallet was almost full where he had to lift it up put it on top. And then we'd get a good chuckle out of that. Of course, then they'd do it to you too when you were over there.
Mm-hmm.
Just mindless humor when you're working in a mindless job.
Yeah. Well, I think we've all had a few of those growing up. One of my first mindless jobs, well, actually my first job was a dishwasher when I was 15. And then I worked at a pizza place. And so, you know, but my first actual real money job was as a longshoreman down at Jones Island.
What do you mean real money job? You didn't get paid to wash dishes? Or you
got paid. But
are you saying big money?
Well, you got much better money being a longshoreman. But the weirdest thing about that, Danny, is that you didn't leave that ship until it was unloaded. It didn't matter if it took you 8 hours or 24 hours.
What exactly is a longshoreman?
Basically,
you just unload ships?
You're unloading ships.
You're a grunt, basically.
You're a grunt. You're down in the hold of a ship, and there's four guys to a gang, and there's usually three gangs to a hold. And you're just throwing these 50 to 100-pound bags on pallets, and the crane's coming down.
There was always a young guy to do that stuff.
Well, yeah, and it's two guys on a bag.
Right, on each one, yeah.
While the crane's getting yours, you know, then the other guys are loading theirs. And then, you know, you can load yours and then wait, you know, 5 minutes or whatever until they get around to you. So you always got a little bit of a break in there. But it was very strange that you had to stay until that ship was done. Those could be some long days, you know.
But you made good bucks.
Yeah, you made good money. And one time, though, and then I'd like to look around on these ships, you know.
Did you ever see any rats or anything?
No, that I never did see. I did have a guy come up to me with a rifle, a guy from Sweden. There was a ship from Sweden, and I was up in the front. Now, I can't read Swedish. I don't know. And there was up by the front of the ship, there was a chain, and then there was like a little shack up in the front. There was a chain, and there was a placard with something written on it. I didn't know what the heck it was. I just wanted to go to the front of the ship and check it out, right? Next thing I know, a guy's talking to me in Swedish, and he's got this rifle. And
like
he's
the Swedish chef?
Yeah. And then he's kind of like motioning with the rifle that I should get away from there, you know? And I could figure that out.
Well, that's
easily
international language.
Yeah.
And then got a rifle.
Yeah. And then the other
that's
thing,
international yeah. language.
Then the other one was if you've ever spoken to somebody from Great Britain that speaks Cockney, now it's supposed to be English. Right? Now, the British speak English. We speak English. They say things a little bit differently than we do, but it's still English, right? Cockney, I had no clue what this guy was saying. Not a clue. And he's supposed to be speaking English. Not a clue.
You couldn't understand him?
No. No way.
No?
No. I mean, that is totally alien. That is totally different.
Did he have a rifle, too?
No, some of the guys that were on shore then or whatever, but... Yeah, so, you know, we all have interesting stuff in our past and what we all did, and it's all part of life's learning experiences, you know, that make us who we are. So,
well, I think every kid growing up should have at least one hard labor physical job where you really got to bust your butt just to kind of appreciate a little, you know, appreciate things in life a little bit, instill a little work ethic. I think one of the greatest jobs I had was when I was working on the road construction company for the four summer or whatever, how many summers. And then I worked when I got out of college, too. I worked there for like 6 months, didn't get a job with my degree right away teaching. So I thought, I can work on the road and shoveling concrete, working 12, 13 hours a day. Had to get up, drive across the state on a Sunday night to leave at 3 a.m, drive across the state to be on site at 6. And they put me in charge of one of the one of the guys retired, and so I got in charge of this big truck where I had to be on the job site before everybody else. Mm-hmm. I had to have all the finishing tool for the finishers, and so they gave me the responsibility, and they all said, hey, Bushy, if you ever want to come back, you got a job. I'd hear that from multiple foremen there, and I got in fantastic shape, man. Fantastic.
But you didn't want to go back.
But there was a huge sense of accomplishment
doing,
and like we'd cut early on Friday, and I would jump in my Trans Am at noon on a Friday and drive back across the state to Green Bay, have fun for the weekend, and do it again on Monday. But summers went fast, but I made a lot of money, and it really helped boost my self-esteem and give me confidence you know, I could do something.
You know, when you brought up you got to have the tough days to appreciate the good, that same thing in fishing. If you caught fish every day, as many as you want, as big as you want it, I mean, it wouldn't be a challenge anymore, but you have to have some of those bad days to appreciate the good days. Exactly. You're exactly right.
And I think a lot of, I don't know, I, a lot of people now, I guess I'm kind of sounding like a boomer talking about the marshmallows, but I think a lot of kids today, I know a lot of them, they'd last one day doing that job. Because back in the day, those foremen, the one guy was crazy. He'd be cussing people out and this and that. One day, one guy slugged him, knocked him out down on by the Illinois Tollway. I remember hearing that legend. But I'm sure a lot of people today, they'd start doing that work for, you know, 1 hour, and they'd be in the hot sun and getting yelled at, and they'd be, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this job.
Well, guess what? They've got a great job coming up, Danny, because Danny is going to play with you a wonderful game that we play every week. It's called the Hornswoggle.
That's right. We're going to play the Hornswoggle now. All you got to do, I'm going to make three statements related to the great outdoors, and you got to tell me if it's true or false by saying Hornswoggle if I'm pulling your leg, or no Hornswoggle if I'm telling the truth. And I know we've got thousands of people that have been waiting this morning breathlessly just for this segment to come up.
Yep.
So you're going to want to call quick at 799-1250 if you've won any of our contests in like the last 5-6 weeks. Try and give somebody else a chance, because we like to spread the wealth. Okay, we're kind of like, you know, we like to sprinkle the infield for everybody and let someone have a chance to win. And Tom over here is going to tell us, what can they win, Tom?
Well, you can win a $10 gift certificate to Carl's Country Markets on Pilgrim and Silver Spring there in Menominee Falls. It's a great place.
That's right, Tom. And Carl's Country Market has the most beautiful selection of meats. You go in there and bring your checkbook or credit card or debit card, whatever you have these days. And man, oh man, it's just unbelievable the stuff they have there. The barbecue sticks are incredible. That's one of the regrets of me not shooting a deer this year, is I didn't get any barbecue sticks from those guys. But once you go out there, you'll be hooked for life. You'll be going back there. So you'll get a $10 gift certificate to go on out there. And they're located over on Pilgrim Road. Pilgrim and
Silver Spring.
Silver Spring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pilgrim and Silver Spring.
All right. So 799-1250. Give us a call.
All right. We'll be right back with more.
All right, let's take care of some business here, gentlemen. Right now we have our Hornswoggle segment, and who do we have on the line there, eh?
Nick from Pewaukee.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Hey, good. Yeah. How you guys doing?
Good morning, Nick.
Doing good, Nick. Hey, Nick, thanks for the referral on the fishing guiding.
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah. I was just talking to Jeff and Katie yesterday.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So looking forward to getting them out this summer then. And
are you not going to take them out this winter?
No.
Okay.
I'm not. And let's see. Nick, you just got married, okay, didn't you?
I did, yeah. We were down in Jamaica.
Yeah, right. Congratulations there.
Good for you.
Did you fish when you were in Jamaica? Or is it, no.
I think Nick was busy with other things.
No. Let him talk.
No, my uncle and brother-in-law went out fishing, but they didn't get anything.
Really?
Those reefs and stuff are so overfished that...
Now, wait a minute. You went on your honeymoon to Jamaica, and you took your uncle and brother-in-law with you?
No, it was a destination wedding.
Oh, okay. Oh, got it. So everybody was down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, destination.
Kids and
got
All right. That's nice.
You had me a little worried there, Nick.
Well, congratulations there, Nick.
We're a close family.
Yeah. It is a close family. So, anyway, here we go. Okay, I was talking about how I shot the wily red fox last weekend. Here's another fox question. Gray fox actually climb trees. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
That is a no Hornswoggle.
No Hornswoggle, yes.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, Tom would have missed that.
I thought that was a Hornswoggle.
They climb trees and sometimes can be seen hiding if they try to escape up like in a hawk's nest or something.
Really?
Their claws are kind of curved, and they'll typically try and go up one that's a sloped tree. Yeah. But, yeah, they can actually climb.
I'll be a son of a
And I've heard that they can even, like, live in some hollows kind of like a raccoon.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, I just learned something.
We had a gray fox that would follow us in when I was in lacrosse bow hunting.
Really?
And I watched it climb a tree. Yeah.
Amazing. So I guess I asked the right guy, because Nick, I think 9 out of 10 people would have missed that one. But you saw that.
Yeah.
When you saw that gray fox climb the tree bow hunting, Was it just doing it of its own accord? Was it trying to escape something or going to a den or what?
It would follow us in on the same ridge, in and out every time. It would just be 30, 40 yards behind us.
Okay.
And it'd be like a cat. It would just come up and then watch you. It was really cool.
So wow. So if it climbed the tree, it was trying to stay on eye level with you and just keep an eye on you, basically?
I don't know. Yeah, I think it was just kind of hanging out.
Kind of a cute.
It was very interesting.
Kind of a cute little guy. He was just kind of keeping you company, kind of wondering what you guys are doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Well, Bushy would have shot that fox. So anyway,
he'd be a dead little fox.
He wouldn't have had a chance to climb the tree.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one. Raccoons. Raccoons climb up a tree going head first, but they can actually come down a tree either going head first or backwards. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
No Hornswoggle.
No Hornswoggle.
That one I knew.
All right.
That one I knew.
Yeah, it kind of boosted Tom's self-esteem with that one here.
Yeah.
And finally, the last one, just to see if you're 3 out of 3. Raccoons, even though they got a nice kind of a fur and stuff, they are not edible. Hornswoggle or no Hornswoggle?
I think this is a trick question. That's a no
Hornswoggle. No, right. I said they are not edible.
Oh.
So it is a Hornswoggle. It's easy to get confused on the whole Hornswoggle, no Hornswoggle. I'm sure you knew you can eat them. Because we were just talking about there's the coon feed in Delafield today, right?
Today at 4:30 in Delafield.
4:30.
The 94th coon feed.
Your new wife will be really thrilled to go out there, Nick. Really take her on a good time. Jamaica, first Jamaica, then the coon feed. Can't get any better than that, eh? So
it'll be a quick divorce.
Yeah, right. All right. Yeah, we'll let you work on finding a better reason to get divorced than a coon feed. So we'll put you on hold, and we'll have him get your info, and I'll mail that out to you, Nick.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Nick.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. That first one, I did not know that.
Yeah. I didn't know it till a week ago when I started doing a little reading after I shot that fox.
Yeah,
I started just being a little...
But it's just a gray fox.
Well, I shot a red fox.
Yeah, I know, but just the red one. I mean, just the gray ones can climb.
As far as I know, it's kind of a thing. The other thing I learned about, like, I shot the red fox I shot, Tom, was a big male. And like I said, it looks like they weigh 30 pounds, but then when you actually, it's all fur, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Matter of fact, I didn't realize I'd hit it 4 out of 5 times because when I first got it, the thick fur, I couldn't see any entrance or exit wounds other than the one in the chest and the one that nicked the back.
Mm-hmm.
But the next day after laying on its side, I saw that I got him solidly through the chest.
Right.
And through the neck because... As it was laying on side, the blood started leaking out through that thick fur. But they're all fur, basically, right?
Right.
So anyway, I weighed it, and it weighed 13 pounds. So I thought, well, gee, I wonder how this compares. So I read in one of my books. I got this great book. I'll bring it in sometime. It's a naturalist wrote it. It was one of those outdoor life book club things and about game animals, and it's got all kinds of great information on each species. And it talks about trophy size or record sizes of different ones. And for the red fox, it said the guy knew of one exceptionally large one that came out of Michigan that weighed 15 pounds. So when he said that's exceptionally large, I thought, well, 13 pounds isn't, you know, that is probably a mature male red fox. When I first saw it trotting along, I didn't think it was.
They don't look
as
big.
No, it's coming dead towards me. Mm-hmm. So I really couldn't see. Once you look at it sideways and you see that big, thick, bushy, then it looks beautiful, you know, long hair. But coming towards me, they're a very narrow,
and that
narrow
big,
target.
Thick tail makes them look bigger.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, they are. But I'll tell you what, it's the, you know what? Let's see if you know this, Tom.
All right.
In fact, there was a gal sitting at Park Avenue Pizza in Pewaukee where if you want to go for a pizza, that's a great place to go. In fact, they're hiring out there. So if you want a job at a nice family restaurant, Park Avenue, Pewaukee. But anyway, I was sitting there the other day talking about the fox to a hunting buddy of mine, and a gal and her husband were sitting right across from us by the bar, and she said, she goes, it's her mating season too, isn't it? And I looked at her, I said, yes, how did you know that? She goes, oh, my husband taught me, he's a hunter. So it is their mating season right now.
Oh, okay.
And this big old fox, boy, I'll tell you what, you could tell he was a male, put it that way. But he stunk kind of a musty smell.
Yeah, sure.
I think he got kind of glands, too. In fact, when I put it in the cooler overnight to take to Dan Johnson, opened up that cooler.
Ooh, it kind of smelled.
Yeah, really kind of a musty.
I bet you they do have glands like
I'm
that.
I'm sure they do, especially in the mating season. So,
all right, well, we got to go to a quick break. Top of the hour. Stay tuned, folks. Hour number two coming up here on the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors.
The following is paid commercial programming. The content and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WSSP, Entercom Milwaukee, its staff, or sponsors. From Lake Michigan to the Mississippi, and every river, lake, and field in between. Let's talk everything outdoors.
All aboard! Ha, ha, ha! You're on the crazy train!
All aboard! Ha, ha,
ha! Welcome to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors. Fasten your seatbelts for a wild ride through Wisconsin's outdoors. Only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
It is the second hour of Power with Dan Bush and Tom Neubauer. Boy, that rhymes, hey? Isn't it good?
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. And we got Sam Schmitz on the boards with us, as usual, on a Saturday
AKA
morning.
AKA Wesley Danger.
Yeah, where we come to you live every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 a.m.
I like that, Wesley Danger.
Dangerfield.
Dangerfield.
There you go.
You can always get in touch with us by calling us on the phone, and that's 414-799-1250, or you can email us live at the Smokies Bait and Tackle Shop's inbox. That's CEOguys@yahoo.com. All right.
All right.
Yeah, we've mentioned it. The coon feed is today out there in Delafield, 4:30.
Do they have raffles and stuff like that where you can win
that
stuff?
I don't know. That maybe Bob from Stumpy Bay can let us know about that.
Hey, Bob, seems to me they had some raffles.
Well, we got a couple people on the line right
now.
So
okay.
Who's the first person?
John in West Dallas.
All right. Hey, good morning, John. Thanks for holding on.
Sure, you're welcome. Good morning to everybody.
Yeah, good morning.
A little more information about the gray fox.
Yeah.
Years ago, my dad worked with some fellas that hunted them with dogs.
Okay.
And what the story was then, the red fox will run like a mile in their circle or whatever you want to call it.
Right there, habitat.
And the gray would be easier. It would circle almost like a rabbit.
Really?
So, and that's what they put a lot of hunting pressure. Well, now they don't hunt them anymore because of the deer. I don't know of any guys that hunt fox anymore. I don't know, but...
I mean, has anybody did they ever eat a fox? I mean, I don't know.
At that time, the hide was probably a little more valuable.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Ever eating them?
That's interesting. You bring up the fox hunting. I guess I've never really thought of people. Well, of course, in England they had the hounds chasing the fox and stuff. I never really thought about people doing it down here. I heard of some guys years ago. I think they used to use dogs to try and get coyotes. When you think of fox hunting, you think of guys with the predator call, sitting and trying to call them. But that is interesting that it would be easier for the gray fox because they're not going to run out of the county on you as opposed to the red fox go further, you said. What did they hunt him with? Shotguns or what? Rifles or what?
Years ago, I think it would have been shotgun. There were no big rifles allowed down here.
And would they then try and have them maybe circle the fox around to where guys were waiting for him and get him with the shotgun as they come running by?
Yeah, just like a rabbit.
Huh.
And then I know when we deer hunted quite a few years back, these guys, they'd get together with some guys that hunted fox up there near Marshfield. And they would, when they'd get the dog started on a track, they'd look for a track and get them started.
Right.
They would go with the trucks and for the next mile road and get where you'd have to look for a place where they're likely to cross, usually like a creek bed or and that's where they would wait for that red fox to come.
That's interesting.
And they hunted them with deer rifles up there, but
right, right. Well, that sounds, and you're right about the fur. Now, my brother shot a nice one years ago, just like the one that I got 2 weeks ago, but he shot it, I think, in 1978 up in Duluth there, Superior, when we were deer hunting, and he shot it right in the neck with the 30-30, and it cut the bottom of the neck just perfectly where it didn't wreck the hide. He took it to a furrier up there in Duluth, and the guy gave him $75 for it, just unskinned or unskinned, however you want to put it. So
wow.
It was very valuable.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know what the value. It's still up there. I'm guessing, you know, Fur Fish and Game magazine will list the current prices, but it's hard to find a Fur Fish and Game magazine on any newsstand. But I think they were still around $40 or something for a good one.
Wisconsin Outdoor News does it every now and then, too.
They do.
They did one. I remember I was talking about it on the show when I brought that article in about what they were worth, you know, roughly.
Right.
Yeah, that was, I think once a year they do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I forget when. But
I mean, I don't know why they don't do something, because, like, being overrun with raccoons. And
You know, the raccoons, there are way too many of them.
They're
terrible.
Yeah,
they make
are.
A mess in the garbage, and I know they look cute and cuddly to, you know, Aunt B looking in her backyard, but
they're not.
They can, and they can carry a lot of parasites and rabies and stuff, and you don't want to mess with them.
No.
So I think the only good raccoon is a dead raccoon in my book.
Yep, and way too many of them in the city.
Right.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well,
take care. Thanks for the call.
See ya. All right. 799-1250 is the phone number.
You know, I never even knew that gray fox existed until that time I was hunting up near Green Bay, and I walked up over the ridge and saw it. And then I went home, and I don't know if my dad was one that knew or if I just looked. I think I looked in that book I was talking about, because I always thought fox, there were all red fox. I never heard of a gray fox. But now, as my memory's coming back, I did actually get a shot at a fox years ago. I and a guy named Sam Tim, in fact, he's a famous wildlife artist. He lives up near Watoma, Wapaka area. I believe he's a minister, but his stuff is in Wild Wings all over the place. He does great paintings, portraits, birds, calendars. Anyway, he and I were hunting outside of Green Bay with shotguns for deer one time, and three or four gray fox ran across a mud-plowed field in front of us about 100 yards away, and we had shotguns.
Yeah.
And we opened up on him with shotguns, right? I had a pump, he had a pump, and it was boom, 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 boom. I think we emptied it. We never touched one of those gray fox because, you know, they run fast, but it was funny because watching those slugs land in the plowed field was like watching mortars land.
That would be cool.
Once it was all done, the smoke cleared, we just looked at each other and started laughing.
That would be cool. Who do you got on the line there?
Mike in West Dallas.
All right. Hey, good morning, Mike.
Morning, guys.
What's on your mind?
Did you hear anything about the bluegills being diseased up in that river up in Monona?
No.
The Yahara River?
That would be the Yahara, yeah.
Well, it's a different name there.
Oh, there's a Cherokee River off of Mendota.
No, this is Monona.
Oh, okay, no, I did not hear anything about that.
Yes, I've seen it on Facebook, but the DNR told everybody not to eat the bluegills.
Really?
But does the river run into Monona or out of Monona? Oh, okay. Because if it ran into, that would not be good.
Well, I have this. That's very rare, if that in fact is the case. Because typically, if fish have like a little parasite or something like that, they say once you cook it up, you know, no problem.
Yeah.
Even like wormy perch,
right? Yeah,
and stuff
yeah.
like that. So if they're telling you not to eat it, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the info. We're gonna have to check that out.
That out for us, yeah. Because that's the lake I fish all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you. Bye now. Who else you got there?
Bob in Hartfield.
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. Hey, Danny. It's Bob from Montrose Club. How you doing?
Hey, doing good, man. Doing good.
Hey, you know what the difference between a fox and a pig is?
They're both omnivores. One has
just say no.
No, I don't, Bob. Tell us
about 12 beers.
Oh.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know we're having our fishery tomorrow at Curly's, and I got that hole dug out on the ice for you, but I got a recliner with an umbrella so you can measure all the fish.
Hey.
So a big one at Curly's Waterfront Pub tomorrow on Pewaukee.
Have you got a cute girl to give me foot massages? Is that a lounge there?
If you man the station, we'll take care of you.
Well, I may be hunting tomorrow. I am kind of playing it by ear right now. It is good to know that you do have a fishery, though, because normally most of them are on Saturdays.
Correct.
So, so yours is on Sunday. So I'm thinking Waterfront has the double whammy this weekend. They probably got one. Yeah. So what are the hours of your fishery then?
Well, it goes from 6 to 3 o'clock. You got to have all the fish registered. We always do lengths because, again, we always promote and catch and release.
Right.
And then at 3:30 is the main drawing. And, again, we got over 15,000 in cash and prizes, so it's a huge prize pool. And I think it comes out to just short of 300 prizes. So it's a good time and have meat raffles all day. And so, yeah, if you get a chance, stop by, bring your buddy Tom, and buy you a beer.
Yeah, and, right. and you can buy the raffle tickets right there. So you can buy the tickets and then – you have the grand drawing for the grand right about 4 or 5 o'clock or something.
Well, it starts at 3:30. The main raffle starts.
Oh, you know what? That's kind of nice because the ones that wait till 5 o'clock sometimes you kind of want to be out of there. You know what I mean? It starts getting a little late. And it's great. There's no football game on this. Well, maybe the Pro Bowl, but that doesn't.
But that don't count.
Right. So okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks. Good luck tomorrow.
Bob. Okay, guys. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye now. And who else we got on the line?
Jeff and Jackson.
Hey, Jeff. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's
doing
up?
Good, man.
No, I was just going to let him, Bushy, know that his fox would be worth about $15-$20 this year.
That's all? Really?
Yeah, the market on fox is really depressed. Coyotes are worth some money. Raccoons are depressed. You can't give a mink away.
Yeah, really? Mink?
Ranchers are having issues with some diseases, and they've been pelting a lot of stuff out. So the mink market kind of drives a lot of the short hair market. So rats are, you know, $350, $325 on the average for some nice rats. Coon are averaging probably, if you can get $20 for a big coon put up, you're pretty good. You're probably averaging $8 with a coon that's fleshed out and dried. Fox market's depressed too.
He sounds like you must be a trapper.
No? Yeah, I've peeled more than my share in my day.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, you mentioned raccoon. I shot one when I was in high school years ago. The only one I ever shot, 22 again, squirrel hunting, and it was, I think I got $15 for it or something like that. But
yeah,
a little better market.
In the last 5-6 years, they really tanked out, and it's going to take 3-4 years for it to come back. But I tell you, the coyotes are worth some money. I had one I shipped last year. I got $140 for.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, they're saying that's supposed to be holding strong this year. They're using it for a trim trade. So I guess they go to Canada and they've been
coats and stuff.
I've been using it for coat trims and stuff like that. So I'm hoping to average, you know, 40-50 on mine this year in a perfect world.
Wow.
Awesome. That's great.
That's interesting. And you would think
the only good coyote?
Dead coyote.
Dead coyote. Yeah,
well,
we agree.
You would think, typically, you would think a red fox is so much more beautiful than just a coyote. You know what I mean?
They're gorgeous.
You would think that would be worth more, but I know it fluctuates. How about with you don't hear much about it these days. Many years ago, you'd hear about crazy people in New York throwing paint on some woman wearing a fur coat Has the Anti-Animal Rights Act, has this affected fur prices?
You know, most of it's so much overseas that they're so little sold in the U.S. And a lot of those, like, places in New York and California are banning natural fur. It has to be a fake fur to be sold or, you know, it can't be ranch anymore. But you go, I guess, to China, I guess they line everything with fur, boots, jackets. That's where the muskrat trade was going. And they'll even line coats with this, you know, low-priced mink fur.
Yeah, I read a while back that in Russia, when the muskrats were high years ago, that Russia was buying most of them to make those, you know, those big furry hats that they have. But But something came up. I don't know if they just started making them out of synthetic fur or something like that, and then the rat, the muskrat, what do you call it, sales went way down then.
Yeah, there's still a demand. China buys most of the muskrat. Yeah, the I guess like about probably 15 years ago, there was over 100 million mink on the market.
Yeah.
And I think last year was 25 million, and now they're pelting a bunch out, so it's going to be even worse. And, you know, it is what it is. If I wanted to get rich, I'd be a radio host.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, fine.
Hey,
with that, we got to let you go.
Thanks
we
for
go
the
to
info.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye.
Thanks very much.
Take care.
Okay, bye now. We got to go to a break, folks.
When we come back, he segued in beautifully.
What's that?
I want to talk some coyote.
Okay, good, because then after the coyote, I have a very, very important topic to talk about.
Valley.
Yeah.
To sneak up on the wabbit.
Yeah, those small wabbits.
Okay. Quiet.
He's Dan Bush. I'm Tom Neubauer. Sam Schmitz is on the boards. We'll be right back.
Wesley Danger. All right. Welcome back to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors. Thanks for taking a ride on the crazy train today. We never know which direction we're going to go, if we're going to stay on the rails or not. But one thing for sure, we're here for 2 hours. So thanks for listening. And Tom.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little coyote. Call coyote. People go, you mean coyote? Okay,
yeah,
I call them yotes, coyotes. So anyway, I mentioned my fox story. The next day, or another day, I almost got a shot at a coyote while squirrel hunting. Yes. So here's the story.
Oh.
I was out. Now, this time I was hunting close by, just out of town. I went outside by Exonia over there, and where I like to shoot the big local big fox squirrels. My goal was to get one over 2 pounds. This time of year, they're big. And they got their fur, and they're wily. So anyway, I hunted 5 hours, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see one squirrel. They were not moving. It was calm.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple gray squirrels. I let those little guys go. So finally, about 2 o'clock, I was getting ready to call it a wrap. And I'm leaning against a tree, and sure enough, about 200 yards away, running along the river, I see this big fox squirrel. So I thought, what the heck? I got to go for it. So I started trying to close the distance towards it. And I got about about halfway towards it. It spotted me. Unbelievable. It saw me at over 100 yards away.
Yeah.
So I closed to get it. It disappeared by a tree. So I got up a little closer, and I put the scope up, and I looked up the tree. And sure enough, I could just see this fox squirrel looking at me. Now, I estimated the range at 70 yards. So I'm doing the mental math thinking, okay, I think it drops 22 sighted in at 25 yards. We'll drop about 5 inches at 100 yards. I'm thinking I'll aim 3 inches high and let her fly. So I got leaning against a tree, put the crosshairs up, bang. All I see is a puff of snow. I just see like snow explode on a branch, and I don't know whether the bullet hit the snow or the squirrel scrambling hit the snow. So now I'm scanning up the tree further with the scope, and as I'm doing that, on the ground, back 100 yards behind it, coming from the river, running through some thick stuff, I see a predator. And I'm thinking, a fox? Coyote? Well, I put the scope up, it's a coyote. And I don't know why he came running, so right away, I start hustling, trying to go tree to tree and get closer to him. And I stop. And now I see it go running back. Now, I had it in the scope. It was probably, I don't know, 175 yards away. With a 22, you're not.
If I
had my 223, it was trotting, I would have taken a shot. I would have had to, you know, hold in front of its chest, you know, and take a long poke. But then I sat and I tried calling, squeaking on the back of my hand.
Yeah.
I worked my way up closer to about 50 yards away from where I'd seen it. I sit for 15, 20 minutes. Totally forgetting about the squirrel, right? So anyway, I think, oh, that coyote, he's gone. I'm done. So I thought, well, I wonder if I hit that squirrel. So I turn around, and now I'm looking at all these trees. I'm thinking, what tree was it anyway, right?
They all look the same.
Right, they all look the same. So get this, Tom. So I'm walking. I walk towards this wing, one big giant tree, yeah, thinking, well, I'll check this tree out first, yeah, right? I'm walking to it, and all of a sudden, out of the sky comes this giant fox squirrel, whoop, and lands dead in front of me.
No kidding. Really?
I couldn't believe it. I cracked up laughing. It was like on cue, man.
Wow.
I mean, 20 minutes later, I'm walking over, and it's like, whoop, and I'm like, yep, guess I hit it. So apparently what I'd done I paced it off, dude. It was 91 yards.
Really?
And my pace is pretty good. So it was at least 85, 90-yard shot with a 22.
Wow.
Longest shot I made. And what happened was I underestimated the distance, so the bullet dropped a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And the squirrel was kind of on the branch facing me, but his head was angling up. So when it dropped low, I think the bullet kind of hit the branch because it went into the belly and lodged on its, went through the back on the top side. When I skinned it, I found the bullet, and the bullet hollow point had never expanded.
Oh.
So I think what happened was the bullet was tumbling, went in, he probably hit that branch and tumbled, went in sideways, didn't expand, and therefore it didn't, you know, it didn't have an exit wound,
right,
but it lodged down under the skin by the back. I still got the bullet, and it was enough to do him in.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never thought I hit that thing.
That's pretty neat.
But my plan now, yeah, Tom.
What's your plan?
Is
now?
I got my predator call, right?
Oh, gonna make some money now.
I'm gonna go out today. I saw a bunch of coyote tracks around there in the fresh snow,
mm-hmm,
and they're running around there. Nobody's bothering those things. I got my predator call. I got my 22 Magnum. I'm not going to use the 223. It's too heavy. I'm going to take the... Plus, if I were on a field up by Sparta, then I'd bring the 223 because you might get a 300, 200-yard shot.
Mm-hmm.
This shooting should be within 100 yards. 22 Magnum
is
good. That's
a good bullet, yeah.
I got that baby sighted
yeah
in with a Leopold scope. Yeah. Randy from Midwestern Shooter Supply gave me a great deal on a Savage 93 and that scope. And I'm going to go with my Predator call today. And guess what, Tom? I'm not going to get nothing. Like, I never get anything when I sit calling. I do that predator hunting. I can't cut. I'll sit. But I'm just going to try it today. Maybe they'll be moving after this fresh snow.
Yeah, a little bit of snow starting to fall now. Where I guess we're supposed to get a few inches this morning. Didn't you tell us that it's supposed to stop by 11 or something?
Around, 10, 11-ish in Milwaukee.
11. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. They'll be on the move. So if you see me driving in with a new Cadillac next weekend, Tom, you'll know I got rich shooting coyotes today. I cashed in, what Bob told us, in the big market for the coyotes.
Right. Well, Danny, I wanted to bring something up on the show today. But here's the thing. I want to get our listeners' perspective on this. I'm serious, folks. 414-799-1250 is the phone number. I want to get your perspective on this. Now, let me ask you a quick question, Dan. If you catch, let's say you catch a 30-inch pike, or a 30, let's say you're on Pewaukee Lake, you catch a 36-inch pike. Can you keep it?
Yeah, 32 inches is the size limit.
Now, should you keep it?
I don't think it matters either way. Depends on what your perspective is.
What about if you catch a 42-inch muskie? Can you keep it?
You can keep it.
Should you keep it?
Well, muskies are a little bit different. They're kind of the trophy fish, not as much density.
Let me ask you another question.
We want to provide future sport, and we want big ones.
Okay.
I would let that go.
We don't have to go into a dissertation. Just
answer
the questions.
I would let that one go. 42 inches.
Let's say you catch a 19-inch bass. Can you keep it?
You can.
But should you?
Wait a second. Are you saying should you or would you?
Time? Here's the question, and when we go to a break, people then can, you know, get a chance to think about it, give us a call. Here's the thing. When it comes, nobody has the right to tell you, as an angler, what you can or cannot keep. If it's within the legal limits of what the DNR says that you can keep, you can keep it. Now, should you keep it? Like, for an example, you go to a little lake and catch 5 19-inch largemouth bass. Should you keep all 5 19-inch largemouth bass? Probably not. You probably should not keep them. But can you? Yes, you can. It's legal. But do you, as another angler, have the right to tell that person, to try to shame that person into keeping those fish or keeping that muskie or keeping that 25-inch walleye? Do you have the right to shame that person, saying, you got to throw that back. That fish is full of eggs. You shouldn't be keeping that fish, when all along that person has the right to keep it? So here's the question to you folks out there. Can you keep those fish, and should you keep those fish? How are you? What's your feelings on that, folks?
I don't know, Tom. It's situation ethics. Every situation's different.
Well, we're going to get into that.
But people can shame other people, because you ever hear of something called the internet?
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into that, okay, folks? So 799-1250, you call us. Tell us what you think about this, all right? We'll be right back with more right here on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM. She moves without a sound. All righty. All right, Danny.
Welcome back to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors.
Yeah, we got a caller on the line, wants to weigh in on this topic of should you and can you. Who do you got there?
Thought it was would you.
Gary and
no,
Lake Mills.
Should you. Hey, Gary, how are you today?
Conjunction straight here.
Good. You know?
What's that?
I woke up at 2 o'clock last night, and I was looking at my phone, and they're talking about Lake Erie, and they can't even swim in there in the summertime because of all the pollution from the manure.
Yeah? I didn't know that.
Would you keep any of them fish that are 10 and 12 pounds?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would
look at it, you know, a different way, because with all the manure spillage and stuff, they can't even drink the water out there. That I don't know if I'd keep anything out of there.
Well, I know a lot of people do fish out there, and they do keep the fish, and they say they're fine, but they don't want to keep those real big ones. They'd rather keep those, you know, 4 to 5 pounders, because there's a lot of those out there too. Yeah, those real big ones.
You know, what the nitrogen and the phosphorus, they said it's really, really dangerous, and you can't even swim in the summertime. And they showed a big green spot where the fish are all dying. They said the Mississippi River down by New Orleans down there, that all the shrimp are dying out in the summertime because of the manure.
Yeah, I know. Down there, I've been down there. That Mississippi River, that's like mud down there.
Right.
That is like mud. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd keep them in the smaller lakes like Pewaukee. And and stuff, but I don't know if I'd keep them, the big ones in the big lakes, because I was often wondering why they wanted to get rid of them all.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, well, they do want to. They are encouraging you to keep everything. You're right.
Yeah, because they do. Yeah, they got a lot of walleyes out there. That's for sure.
Right.
All right. Thanks for calling. I see we got another caller on the line calling in, wanting to get to this stuff. We'll get to this caller. No, I am using the right thing. Should you or can you? Yes. Should you? Like you said, it's situational. It depends. You know, if you should or should not, and we'll get into a few of those. Points. We'll wait. Okay, here's the thing. If I was fishing a little lake, I would never keep five big bass out of it, because these little lakes only have so many, you know, legal fish in it. Would I keep one or two? Yeah, sure. But I wouldn't do that every time I went there to some little lake, you know what I mean? I had a argumentative discussion with Gary Roach. You know Gary Roach, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were up at that Max Sports Shop up in Sturgeon Bay one time, and we had this argumentative discussion. And he said that anybody who is in his boat that he was guiding up there in Minnesota, he would not allow them to keep a legal muskie. Didn't matter how big it was. You know, he said, I would shame them into throwing it back. I would just get on their case. And I said, Gary, what gives you the right to do that? Your DNR said it's legal for them to keep it. I mean, it's one thing to recommend it, but to shame them into not keeping it if they want to keep it, that reminds me of a story, Dan. I was guiding this guy and his son. He caught a 36-inch muskie, and he wanted to keep it. And I said, you know, if I were you, I'd let it go. You know, he said, well, I want to mount it. It's my first legal muskie. And I said, if you fish in these spots and do what I'm, you know, showing you, you're going to catch a bigger one. And then you'll want to mount that one. I said, if I were you, I'd let this little guy go. And he didn't think it was little, though. To him, this was big, right?
Right.
So the following week, and honest to God, following week he calls me and he said, Tom, you were right. I said, what do you mean? He says, I took that little muskie to the taxidermist. He said, or the 36-incher to the taxidermist. He says, I was out on Pewaukee yesterday and caught a 44-incher. I took that to the taxidermist and took my 36-incher back. So, yeah, I mean, it. So, yeah, there's things. Who do you got on the line?
Randy in Grafton.
Oh, yes. Hi, Randy.
Hey, guys, two weeks in a row.
I was just going to say, two weeks in a row. That's something else.
You're on a roll.
Yeah.
What an honor, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I almost forgot what. Okay, my point.
I think this subject is right up your alley.
I don't know about that anymore. I mean, how many discussions have we had about this regarding this kind of stuff in the past? I understand what you're saying, Tom. But, you know, I remember one time we were getting together with Dale Strohsheim, fishing with a mutual friend up there, and we're getting together with him after his guide, and we were gathering around the Sturgeon Bay fillet table, the cleaning table they have up there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were some bait fishing years ago used to be real popular. Guys really transitioned when the perch bite fell off up there. Many of the quote-unquote meat hunters transitioned to smallmouth. And, boy, it really did hurt. And Dale mentioned something as guys were there flaying up 18 to 20-inch smallmouth bass.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I do know there are some guys who can get a little bit caustic when it comes to criticizing others keeping fish. But on the flip side of that, there are some jags who flaunt the fact that they're going to take their five fish and they're going to kind of flaunt the fact and make a big deal about it. It is, in fact, their right to keep them. And I think sometimes just despite the fishermen who are trying to fish more conservatively. So, yeah, like up there, you can take five smallmouth, but can you imagine if every smallmouth fisherman up there, Danny, you fish up there, kept those five smallmouth?
Oh, yeah.
So be a little bit conscious of the potential of the fishery, but also your fellow fishermen who do practice.
You know, I think, Randy, I think that's where we as anglers should have our own personal limits, let's say. You know, do I need to keep 25 bluegills? No. 10 is plenty for me and my wife, you know. Do I need to keep 5 bass? No. 2 are plenty for me and my wife. You know. So do I need to keep 2 legal northern pike? No. 1 is plenty, you know. So I think sometimes we as anglers have to, you know, put some limitations on ourselves, because it goes back, like I said, yeah, can we? Sure, we can keep that limit or whatever, but should we? No,
well,
not all the time, no.
Well, I think it just boils down to, like Randy saying, I think it is good for people to, like, encourage people or try and tell them, you know, maybe keep them at the smallmouth, don't keep the 19-20 inch, keep some small one. I think it's okay to tactfully do that.
Yeah, tactfully.
I think where the line crosses, where somebody acts like, that God died and left them in charge.
Right, exactly.
So I think there can be, on the other hand, like Randy says, there are some jigs that probably do need to get hammered. Years ago, there was the one guy up in Green Bay who allegedly was, I heard a story of some guy who was keeping all these 50-plus inch muskies before they had the 54-inch limit and putting them all over his bar.
Yeah.
Maybe those are the people. There are some people that probably deserve to come down on, but for the Joe average guy, it's good to encourage them, but I think you just got to kind of do it tactfully and try and be kind to everybody. Don't be rude or mean.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Randy. We do appreciate it. We always like talking to Randy, you know, when he calls.
Two weeks in a row.
Yeah, and here's another thing, Dan. If a guide says to prospective clients, let's say a muskie guide, now if you said to your prospective clients, you cannot keep a muskie in my boat. You cannot. No matter how big it is, you cannot keep a muskie. That at least gives the client then the opportunity to say yes or no, right? If he's intent on keeping a big one, let's say, you know, then he wouldn't go with you.
Well,
but if he doesn't mind throwing them back, if that's what he's into, which that's the reason why we have so many muskies.
Most people are into that now anyway. So
we are.
I haven't had anybody want to keep one for years. But if they are going to be so adamant, how many of them, if you look at their website, will ever put catch and release only?
Yeah, not many.
I've never seen it.
No, I've never seen it either.
Check Gary Roach's. Does he put catch and release only on there?
I don't think he does.
He's going to wait until you're there in
anymore.
His...
Oh, okay. I don't think he guides anymore. He's pretty old now. Who do you got on the line?
Dennis in Boulder Junction.
Oh, our Boulder Junction connection. Dennis Royce coming, calling us from God's country. Hey, Dennis.
Yes. Good morning, guys. How you are?
Are you in the restaurant this morning?
Yes, I am. I'm having coffee. I'm going to sit down and have breakfast here after I talk to you. But I just give you a report from the north and let you know what's going on up here in case somebody's coming up. And
all right.
Got a lot of snow. Ice conditions are okay in most lakes for walking only. I wouldn't recommend any traffic. I know they're driving on some lakes, but boy, I wouldn't recommend it. The ice is not good because of the fact we got so much snow up here right now. So, I don't know how it is down by you, but...
Yeah, it's pretty much walking only, and you're not going out and running willy-nilly everywhere.
No, we've had people try driving on the lakes, and a lot of people have gone through already. In fact, we lost two snowmobilers here about 2 weeks ago, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not good, but you got to be careful, and you got to stay on the marked trails if you're snowmobiling. But right now, our snow total is 20 inches more than it was a year ago, and we had our snowiest record last year, and I think we're going to beat that by the time the season's over.
Wow. That's so your snowmobiling and skiing is great, huh?
That's not so good. Not so good for the deer.
No, it's not really. And the deer, like Tom said, the snowmobiling is fantastic. The trails are great. There's plenty of snow, and there's a lot of that going on right now. And any outdoor snow activities are excellent. People are getting on the lake fishing, but like I say, it's tough to get around. There's a lot of snow. But deer are going to suffer from this pretty soon because I know when they jump off the trails, you see them, they're up to their bellies in snow, and it's tough getting around.
Wow, wow. So
a big difference from the north to the south right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, right now I'm looking out the studio windows, and it's snowing right now. So.
Wow, it's snowing up here all week long.
Is that right?
One to two, whatever it is, and by the time you get done with the end of the week, you got 7, 8, 9 inches of snow around it.
Better you guys than us.
Yeah,
we don't need it anymore.
I'm just hoping a lot of that's gone down by you when we come down for the sports shows.
Yeah, that's right. That's coming up soon, not too far away.
That's not far away at all. That's
all right.
Sure, so.
All right, Dennis. Well, thanks for calling.
Talk to you guys later, and we'll keep in touch.
All right. Thank you. Bye now. Okay, with that, we got to take a break. 799-1250 is the phone number. Can you keep those fish? Should you keep some of those fish? Hey, that's up to you. It's a personal choice, I guess. We'll be right back with more right here on, 105.7 FM, The Fan.
No, it's not all for today. We're still with us. This is the Skipper Bud's Cutting Edge Outdoors. Hey, thanks for taking a ride with us today. And take it away, Tom.
Oh, we got Dave on the line. Now, I'm just wondering if this is Dave Olson from Pewaukee. Is this Dave? Is this a big O?
We'll find out.
No, this is not Dave Olson.
Oh,
there you go. Jump into conclusions and conclusions.
Well, you never know. So, what's on your mind, Dave?
Guys, my family owned a cabin up in Forest County for 20 years.
Yeah.
And we happened to be on a lake that was not speared.
Okay.
But I think spearing enters into the conversation. If you're on a lake that's speared, years ago, Barbara Crabb gave the whole northern third of the state to the Indians.
Right.
And ruined occupations of resort owners.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Those lakes just are—they're empty of walleyes. Now I'm basically just a walleye fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking, it's a personal decision. No matter where you are, but if you're fishing walleyes on a lake that's speared, every big walleye you throw back is going to end up with spear marks in it.
Yeah.
Coffers of the Indians.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at it. Keep that in mind.
Hey, Dave, right? did you hear where the Minocqua chain is going to be walleye-less? You can't keep walleyes again this year?
There you go, Tom.
Yeah, can't do it this year.
My dad knew resort owners that couldn't make it because she ruined walleye fishing in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Barbara Crabb.
Yeah, yep. And that's one of the things.
You want to throw one back, you know where that's going to end up.
I agree 100%.
You're saying at this point is you're not going to go, oh, there's hardly any of them. We better let them go so they can repopulate. You're saying they're never going to repopulate here. They're all getting speared anyway, so I might as well keep the goddamn thing.
Yeah, and the DNR just keeps putting more in them every year, you know, with the stocking.
They're all stocked fish. Our particular lake has no natural reproduction anymore. So you want to throw it back and give it an Indian, your prerogative. Feel free.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying, Dave.
Gotcha.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate
it. We're with you.
Yeah, we're with you. We got another caller on the line.
Another
boy, a lot of people calling the show today about this topic. You know, and the thing is like, you know, yeah, I realize people like to eat fish. I like to eat fish, okay? People like to eat fish. The thing is that, yeah, you can hurt a body of water. I'll tell you, years ago, Dan, I was really upset with myself. When I had my bait shop, this guy wasn't able to catch bass. So I showed him the Kelly worm and the worm, you know, the pre-rigged plastic worms that spin.
Right.
I showed him how to rig it and all that, and he would fish Freeze Lake. And he would come in and tell me about all these nice bass he was taking out of Freeze Lake, how many he was keeping.
On the Kelly worm?
Yeah, and the worm. And I told him, I said, you realize that there's only so many, you know, legal size back in a little, I mean, Freeze Lake is a little lake. What is it, like maybe 80 acres
or less, maybe?
I don't know. I said, there's only so many there. There's going to come a point in time when you go out there and you're not going to be able to catch many at all. I said, so just remember that. And we do have a caller on the line. I'll get to another story real quick. Who do you got there?
Paul in New Berlin.
Hey, Paul in New Berlin.
Hey, Paul.
You know, fishermen, they catch and release.
Yep.
I think the Indians should spear and release.
Hey. I don't think they can. That's the problem.
Maybe. I don't know how they could do that.
Yeah.
Maybe put a paintball on the end of their spear, just mark them and let them. I don't know.
Well, I think if they just brought down the limits. Here's the thing. I don't mind Indians doing or Native Americans doing this as what are the words I'm looking for, Danny? Something that they did in the past many years ago.
Part
a tradition.
Their, part
tradition.
Of their ceded ceded rights.
I mean, so if they follow their tradition, but here's the thing. I mean, 35,000 walleyes? Do they really need to take that many? I mean, let them go out and get their limit of five or whatever the limit is on the lake, three or five, you know, like we have a limit.
Right.
And let them do it the way they did it years ago. Okay, that's cool. But nowadays, did you know that some of them are out there with pontoons and shocking like the DNR does? Did you ever see that? Or know about that, Paul?
No.
You sure they're actually shocking?
Yeah. Yep. I talked to a guy who saw them going right by the front of his dock doing it.
I don't know. My attitude is...
I think
is,
that's illegal.
Yeah.
That might be illegal.
I don't know. You know, who knows?
I don't know.
It'll eventually, the tradition, they say there's less people hunting and fishing. Maybe the people doing that will eventually kind of, as the young guys get all, you know, video games to play, they'll do that instead of go out in the middle of the night and spear walleyes. You know, my idea years ago, when they initially were talking about this stuff where they said, well, you know, that people really need the food, right?
Yeah.
My idea was charge every Wisconsin fishing license buyer an extra $1 or $2, take that money, go buy a bunch of walleyes or fish from the markets and distribute it to the people there.
Yeah,
help feed them. And I'd be willing to pay a couple bucks more on my license and they'd probably get even more walleyes than what they're spearing. Although I've heard some of those walleyes end up in some people's restaurants up there.
Yeah. So was there anything else, Paul?
Nope.
No. Okay. Well, thanks
Take
for
care,
calling.
Paul.
Appreciate it. Well, no more calls today. Don't take any more over there.
Why?
We don't need any more, Sam.
We don't need no more? What? We're ready to shut it down?
Well, in a couple minutes,
We're all done?
In a few minutes, about two, 3 minutes, almost all done. So the thing is that like, Danny, I think the point I was trying to get across is that sometimes we as anglers have to submit ourselves to personal limits. You know, what to do, what we feel is right. Here, I got another quick story. There was a guy that I know, and I'm not going to mention any names or nothing.
All right.
He would go on Mendota, and him and a couple of his buddies, three of them, and this is when there was a 50-fish limit and a 25-fish limit.
Yeah.
And he was very good at finding the perch and catching them.
Right.
All right. So they would catch all these big perch, and they would take their limit every time, and they would go 2-3 days a week. Now, if somebody ever called the DNR and said, check this guy's freezers, he'd have way over the bag, you know, what he's supposed to be able
right.
to have, right?
Right.
Well, anyway, they went out there, and they would do this year after year after year. And if anybody's ever been on Mendota when those perch were running there, there's 1,000 boats up there. Well, at least 500, let's put it that way. But there's a lot of people who do it, right? And they're all doing the same thing. They're all keeping their limits of big perch. Well, eventually, that big perch population was going down, 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 and this guy was starting to complain. Well, the DNR's got to do something, by golly. There's not enough of those big perch out there. We're not getting those 10, 11, 12 inchers. We're getting those little 7, 8 inchers, you know. The DNR's got to do something. What did the DNR do out there? And I said, hey, don't you think you had a hand in this, you and your buddies and everybody else out there taking their limits 2-3 days a week?
Well,
I mean,
that's kind of like years ago. We hunted up there at the farm up in Douglas County, and my uncle was talking to the other gang up there, the Carlson gang. And the Carlsons, man, they'd make drives and they'd shoot all kinds of deer. And he was talking to one of the Carlsons one time during deer season. And the Carlson said, man, we really just, you know, don't see many bucks. Mm-hmm. And my uncle pointed to like the 5 nub bucks hanging on the pole.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what do you think's going on up
here? Yeah. You're not letting those grow.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like a revelation to him. Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that's why, you know, it's something to think about. And one of the reasons we have great muskie fishing on Pewaukee is because of catch and release. But I'll tell you what, if somebody I know wanted to keep one,
Thump them on the head with a crowbar.
Who am I to say, no, you got to throw that back? You know, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know.
No, we all want to be prudent, practice catch and release.
Yep.
But I don't think people should be telling people what they can and can't do.
Right.
We just got to all be good stewards and try and steer people in the right direction and make good decisions ourselves.
Right. Well, Danny.
Oh, I feel like I've been in church, Tom.
Yeah, I all know. This, it's been, geez, but this has know, been a I, great this, show today. We've touched a lot of topics, you know.
Touched a lot of hearts.
Yeah.
A lot of minds.
And I appreciate everybody listening today. This is kind of, I think a lot of people are staying in now with the snow falling and that, just kicking back, having a coffee, listening to us two jokers.
Yeah.
All right.
Or they're getting ready for a fishery.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got, Danny.
Yep. That's all I got.
To all the listeners, thanks for listening. And God bless and stay free, everyone.
You've been listening to the Skipper Buds Cutting Edge Outdoors. Drive safe today, my friends. We'll talk to you next week.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.